high functioning anxiety, it's so much of what's rewarded in our society, right? Like we wear busyness like a badge of honor. Like we're always talking about how little sleep we get and how busy we are. And I want to really shift that conversation so that we're prioritizing rest, but also that we're learning how to rest without feeling guilty. Because what I've experienced is that a lot of recovering perfectionists don't know how to truly relax without feeling like, oh my gosh, I need to be achieving, I need to be doing, because that's always how we've learned we're worthy. But it requires this kind of mindset shift into knowing that you deserve to relax, it's rest is productive, and then you go out and be ambitious.
You're listening to the Anxious and Ambitious podcast. I invite you to take a moment out of your busy day to just slow down and take a deep breath. I know that you are ambitious, making big moves, going places, and chasing after your dreams. But the more you can get into this present moment, the more you can tap into your true power. This podcast will help you to harness your anxiety and use it to manifest everything you're dreaming of and more. I'm your host, Nicole, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking all about how to conquer overthinking and manage anxiety naturally and holistically. So an exciting conversation to come, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by a special guest, Heather Lillico. Heather is a holistic nutritionist and yoga and meditation teacher. She teaches overthinking, people-pleasing perfectionists how to manage anxiety naturally and holistically. Heather is the creator of the anxiety support app Cultivating Calm, which we'll be exploring some details of in this conversation. And she has helped hundreds of women to find freedom from anxiety and self-doubt. So Heather, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Nicole. I'm excited to be here and to dive into this conversation.
Yes, I am excited as well. I really admire how you combine nutrition with mindset and movement to really holistically help women with anxiety. In my personal life, I have found a holistic approach to be so important and impactful. So I'm excited to dive into this with you today. Now, to start, I know you've had your own journey with anxiety, so I'd love, if you don't mind, if you could share a little bit about your background and what led you to focus on managing anxiety and overthinking for other women.
Absolutely. Happy to share a bit of this journey. So as you mentioned in that lovely introduction, I am a holistic nutritionist, a yoga and meditation teacher, and I started working in this area because I wanted to help people manage anxiety naturally, and it was through my own experience with it that inspired me to do this. So growing up, I was always kind of a nervous kid. My mom used to say that I had a capital W for worry on my forehead, and I was sensitive, any type of criticism, and I was in tears. I was a perfectionist. If I didn't get top marks, it felt like a complete failure. And I was an overthinker. And it would come out in all sorts of ways. Like growing up, I was a figure skater. And I remember one night before a big competition, I was laying in bed and I couldn't sleep because I was going through all the what ifs. What if I fall the next day? What if I disappoint my coaches and my parents? So all of this worry, all of this self-doubt, it followed me through from childhood to university. And that's really where the pressure started to build and started to get to me. And I started experiencing panic attacks. And I remember the first one I had, I was at a crowded party in university and my palms started to get sweaty. My heart started to beat fast. My vision tunneled. I felt this overwhelming sense of dread take over. And so I locked myself in the bathroom and I just slid down the wall and I was waiting for it to pass. And ever since then, I started living in fear of like, when will the next panic attack come up? So something needed to change. And I went to my doctor and I said, listen, I'm having a lot of anxiety. Like, what can we do about it? And she pulled out her prescription pad and she started writing me out a prescription for anti-anxiety meds. And I said, well, let's just pump the brakes here for a moment. And I want to see if there are some things that I can do naturally first. Mm-hmm. So this is really where I went on that journey to figure out what worked. And I started by changing my diet. I researched some anti-anxiety foods and added them in, and I started mm-hmm. to feel calmer. And then I still felt like my nervous system was really amped up. So I started practicing yoga and I felt a little bit calmer still, but I still felt like I had a million different thoughts in my mind, like spiraling, swirling, you know, planning 10 moves ahead. And so I started practicing meditation, and that was like the last piece of the puzzle for me. And so this is what I share with others now, this holistic and natural way to manage anxiety through the power of meditation, nutrition, and yoga. And so we can chat about all of that today.
Wow. Yes. I'm excited to unpack some of these lessons that you learned on your journey so that we can apply it in our own journeys as well. And I find it really admirable that you advocated for yourself in that way of let's, you know, pump the brakes a little bit and explore more holistic practices. Because for me personally, in my life, it was more the opposite. I did get anxiety attacks and panic attacks, chronic anxiety at a much younger age. So I was more kind of going off what my parents and what the doctors were telling me to do. But further on in my journey, when I started to discover this impact of movement and meditation and nutrition is just huge. And I feel like nobody talks about nutrition for anxiety. So this is really important stuff. Now, before we dive into this three-pillar approach that you have, I'd love if you could share a little bit about this app that you've created for women to help manage their anxiety.
Yeah. So the app is called Cultivating Calm, and I developed it based on, you know, what I've learned about these pieces of the puzzle that can come together. So this using mindset, nutrition, and movement, and really bringing it together in a way that feels accessible, it feels easy, it feels convenient. Because what I found to be some gaps is that, you know, I used to run group programs for anxiety in the past, and they were great when people were in them and they would start to see changes and, you know, we'd work on habits, but then a lot of people backslide afterwards, right? That, you know, life takes over, our old patterns can come back into play, and there's not that same level of accountability. So I wanted to create something that makes people feel like they're accountable to something, you know, so they can check off their daily practices that they're doing. And I wanted it to be something that doesn't feel overwhelming, because anxiety is overwhelming enough, right? It already feels for a lot of us like we have this endless to-do list to tackle. So I didn't want it to be like another thing on the to-do list. I wanted it to be a place that has short, targeted practices so that you can go pop on a 2 or 3 minute meditation. Or, you know, when you're feeling like imposter syndrome rise up, there's a meditation for that. Or when you're feeling like you're not good enough or like perfectionism is coming out, then you can go pop on a meditation. Or, you know, maybe you just had a panic attack or it's on the horizon, go take a 10-minute yoga class and just regulate and calm down. I wanted it to be really simple for people. And to create this, I guess, sort of community, because in my experience, anxiety was always very isolating. Like I always felt alone. I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have this support system around me. And for myself, like I hid the anxiety for so long, and it wasn't always recognized because I was a high achiever, right? I got top marks. I went into the corporate world and got promotions and worked really hard. But, you know, underneath what was going on was that I had no boundaries. I couldn't say no. I was burning myself out. Like all of that was underneath. So I wanted to create this sort of community where we can just normalize having these types of conversations about mental health.
That is so beautiful. I love that you're creating this community and accountability and really accessibility for anxiety practices. You're so right. It can be so isolating. And many of us either, you know, don't like to talk about it, or even don't like to think about it ourselves, right? A lot of the time, if you are somebody who's ambitious and you're a high achiever, then you have this high functioning anxiety, and we tend to just sort of push it down until it explodes. So I love that you're creating this method to help people manage it more on the regular daily exercises that they can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's all about habits, right? And a lot of this like type of high functioning anxiety, it's so much of what's rewarded in our society, right? Like we wear busyness like a badge of honor. Like we're always talking about how little sleep we get and how busy we are. And I want to really shift that conversation so that we're prioritizing rest, but also that we're learning how to rest without feeling guilty. Because what I've experienced is that a lot of recovering perfectionists don't know how to truly relax without feeling like, oh my gosh, I need to be achieving, I need to be doing, because that's always how we've learned we're worthy. But it requires this kind of mindset shift into knowing that you deserve to relax. It's rest is productive. And then you go out and be ambitious.
Yeah. And I hear that all the time from my clients as well, is this idea of when I go to rest, or let's say I go to a massage, that's when my mind is the loudest and it's not enjoyable at all, right? It's actually the opposite. So I keep myself busy and I keep myself working because that keeps the thoughts at bay. So I'm curious, what would you say to that?
It's something I'm so familiar with, that this need to be doing, doing, doing. And I was someone that never really learned how to process my emotions. So I would either numb out, I would use food to numb out, or I would escape with like online shopping, any type of distraction that I could find to avoid feeling emotions and processing them. And especially these uncomfortable ones, right? These ones that are loud and they're intense. And it was really a journey of learning how to process these emotions through so many different methods, but movement was a big one, of getting better connected with my body. And then also meditation is so huge for folks who are learning to process emotions, because meditation allows us to see the emotion almost as separate from ourselves, right? You're experiencing an emotion of anxiety. It doesn't mean you are at your core anxious. It's just something you're experiencing. So yeah. I would encourage people to dive into that a little bit deeper so that they can find that separation from the emotions and then learn to be able, because once we learn to process, then we can learn to relax.
Yeah, I think that that is so important, learning how to actually process your emotions and understand them, right? This emotional intelligence piece. And for all of us ambitious people out there, this emotional intelligence is actually the biggest indicator of your success, more so than intelligence. So whether or not it's to help you manage your anxiety or amplify your success, I think this is a great point. And one thing that you said there is, you know, using food to numb out or escaping with online shopping. This escapism is so common. And also we can use these things like movement and like nutrition to help us with our anxiety instead of in this way as being more of like a coping mechanism or this way of escaping. I'd love to chat with you a little bit about this idea of nutrition, because I think it's something that is not nearly talked about enough, but it's a very important aspect of our well-being. So can you explain for us a little bit about this connection between nutrition and anxiety and how the foods we eat can influence our well-being?
Definitely. So with nutrition, and that's one of the, you know, the pillars that I talk about, nutrition. And when I'm talking about nutrition, I'm really meaning like it's about the foods that you eat, right? Like on a simple, basic level, it's about the food that you eat, because no amount of mindset work, no amount of movement is going to help you feel calm if your body doesn't have the building blocks that it needs to feel calm. And that's what's nutrition. That's what nutrition is providing, because think about it, like the nutrients that you consume, it literally becomes the cells in your body, right? So we need certain nutrients to help us feel calm. And when we're consuming foods, and maybe we can talk about some foods that are like top notch for nutrition, because we're looking to get certain types of nutrients. So we're looking to get things like magnesium, a mineral. It's involved in over 300 reactions in the body. It's involved in a lot of calming processes in the body. It helps promote melatonin for sleep, and also helps produce GABA. So GABA is like our brain's relaxing neurotransmitter. It helps us feel calm. And when we are anxious, we are low in GABA. So we want to make sure that we're consuming foods that are helping to bump up that GABA so that we can feel relaxed. Mm. And one of the best sources, I guess, of magnesium are going to be seeds. So seeds like pumpkin seeds, chia, flax, sunflower, hemp as well. These are all great sources of magnesium. They're also high in zinc, and zinc is another mineral that's going to help support mood, also relevant for immune system. And seeds are pretty easy to incorporate. Like you could, you know, have a couple handfuls throughout the day. You could also, in the morning, I do ground up flax in my smoothies to hide it in there. You could put chia in there as well. You can put oatmeal and top it with seeds. You could even do like salad dressing out of hemp seeds and blend it up. But you're aiming to get like a couple tablespoons a day. They're like, seeds are like nutrition powerhouses for mood. So that can be a great one for folks to incorporate. Leafy greens are also incredible for mood. They're rich in folate, which is good for feeling relaxed and calm and warding off depression. You can put your leafies in smoothies. So when I'm doing that morning smoothie, I put spinach in. You could also do like arugula on pizza, or aiming for like those deep, rich colored ones like Swiss chard or kale. Those are going to be really high in antioxidants, and antioxidants are going to support the brain and protect it from damage. So those could be a couple to work in. The one I think that people don't eat enough of and is so important for anxiety are fermented foods. So yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut, kefir, tempeh, miso, because these types of foods have live bacteria in them. And this live bacteria goes into the gut. Now, in your gut, you have a couple kilograms worth of live bacteria, like 100 trillion bacteria. And they do so many things for you. These little guys balance your blood sugar, which is actually key for anxiety, because if our blood sugar dips down, we have to get adrenaline involved to bring it back up. So if our blood sugar is dysregulated or falls low, we can feel anxious as a result of that. So these bacteria balance blood sugar. They also make a lot of your immune system, and they help make many of your neurotransmitters. So things like serotonin that help us feel happy, GABA, that one I mentioned, that helps us feel calm and relaxed. The bacteria in your gut are actually helping to make a lot of these, and they can communicate with your brain via the vagus nerve, via hormonal connections. There's a lot of communication between the brain and the gut. So we can actually support the gut better with things like fermented foods. I usually recommend aiming for 2 different ones a day. If you don't have any in your diet right now, start low, go slow, start with just one, and then work your way up to 2 different ones.
Wow. So many great ideas there. And I love that you're emphasizing how it's these nutrients, when we're low in these nutrients, that can actually cause anxiety in and of itself. Because a lot of the time we think, oh, my anxiety must be stemming from maybe my brain chemistry or something going on in my environment. But a lot of this can actually come back to your gut and just your blood, the nutrients that are circulating throughout your system.
And there's a lot of research showing that people with anxiety are found to chronically be low in certain nutrients like magnesium, like zinc. And then when they supplement or, you know, add it back into the diet, they start to feel calmer. So there is absolutely this relationship and these kind of trends that we see that we want to watch out for. And, you know, as we're coming into the winter months as well, something to be concerned about or aware of is like the vitamin D link, because vitamin D also has big links to mood. So it could be a time to supplement as well to make sure that you're getting enough of that in.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, for me, I will take supplements myself for magnesium as well as, but the seeds is a great thing instead of supplements as well. You know, vitamin D, I think, has been huge, especially living in Canada. There's almost no sun when the winter comes, and that vitamin D gets real low. But when I was at the height of my anxiety, especially in my sort of preteen, teenage years, my main diet was bread and cheese, to be honest. I lived off of like mac and cheese and grilled cheese sandwiches and things like that. And none of my doctors ever asked me about my nutrition habits and how that may be contributing to my anxiety. So this is really key. For our listeners, if you feel like maybe your nutrition is not fully dialed in and you're dealing with a lot of anxiety, like you said here, Heather, this is the building blocks. So this is a place to start looking to see how you can support yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's such an untapped link. And, you know, a lot of times we're looking for what's in the environment that's causing the anxiety, but what if it was internal, right? What if it was an internal imbalance that we could then correct with proper nutrition, like eating real whole foods and eating a variety of them? I like to say eat the rainbow and not Skittles. So I'm talking about like a variety of natural color. Of course, like eat Skittles if you want Skittles, they're delicious. But we also want to make sure that we're getting in like a variety of colors and, you know, eating food as close to as nature has intended it as possible.
Yeah, I love that idea. Eat the rainbow and not Skittles. And this is another thing with Skittles is with sugar, right? If your blood sugar is off, then that can increase anxiety, as you've mentioned. So I'm curious, in your experience, are there any like nutritional habits, kind of like mine with just living off of bread and cheese, that you have seen that contributes to this increased anxiety?
It's such a great question. I think there are a couple things that we want to look out for. So certainly processed sugar is one, because it's going to affect how your body can balance blood sugar. So when I say processed sugar, I mean, you know, your candies, your cookies, your cakes, sort of like your processed goods that might come in a package, and it is going to affect blood sugar. It's also going to affect gut bacteria, because we know that people who consume high sugar diets have less gut bacteria and they have less variety of them. So it's sort of like, you know, double duty. Like, it's not really giving you any nutrients when you're consuming processed sugar, and it's using up your body's resources to process it, and it's going to affect gut bacteria. So instead, someone could focus on more natural type of sugars. So maple syrup, honey, agave, coconut sugar. Date sugar is a great alternative. It's typically just dried dates, so you're going to get the benefit of fiber in there and typically some minerals. Mm-hmm. Someone could consume monk fruit as well. Like lots of different options. And sugar from fruit is absolutely fine. There's sort of this misconception that like, well, fruit is so high in sugar, I should stay away from it. The thing that people don't realize is when you're consuming fruit, it's food in its real whole form, right? So the fruit has fiber in it, and fiber is going to slow down that absorption of sugar. So you're not going to get the same spike in blood sugar as if you just ate, you know, a spoonful of sugar. It's going to be a little bit different. And then the fruit is giving you antioxidants as well. Mm-hmm. So that could be one to think about, sugar and how it's affecting anxiety. The other one I would mention would be caffeine and how that's going to affect the nervous system. I gave up caffeine probably about 6 years ago now. And I found when I was consuming caffeine, it was like panic attack. It would just start to make my heart beat fast. And especially if I had too much, and it was affecting digestion as well. So if someone is already anxious, you know, they're already tending more towards that fight or flight mode, right? That sympathetic activation in the nervous system. And we don't want any help getting into that mode. We want to be calming the nervous system and relaxing it. So alternatives like dandelion tea, mushroom coffee, even like decaf coffee is fine, or having tea instead. Those could be some alternatives. Or my favorite suggestion is let's address sleep. Because what is it about the morning time where we should be the most rested, right? We've just had presumably like 8+ hours of solid, high quality sleep, then we wouldn't need coffee. But something about our sleep is not restorative so that we're feeling like we need the coffee to perk up, wake up, and focus. So let's kind of, you know, work on that first domino that's falling instead so that we do feel more awake.
Yeah, that's a really great point. So sugar, caffeine, and then I love this idea of looking at sleep, because if we're not rested, then how are we supposed to properly understand and process our emotions, right? It's like a tired baby. They're going to have a temper tantrum much faster, and we're the same way even as adults.
100%.
Yeah. So how long then do you find that when your clients and the members of your app start making these nutritional changes, how long until they start to see the impact on their anxiety levels?
It's faster than people think. So if someone started to shift, so for example, I had a client who was drinking 8 coffees a day. She was having 8 coffees a day, and no judgment behind that. She was where she was, but we brought her down to 5 coffees a day. And within 2 days, she was like, I already feel calmer. I already feel the effects of this. So with caffeine, it can happen very fast. Now, of course, with caffeine, if you go kind of cold turkey, there is going to be that withdrawal effect where perhaps you do not feel better right away because you're dealing with headaches and the body adapting. Right. But for most of these foods, when we're either removing or reducing, you know, some of those ones that make anxiety worse, like sugar, caffeine, or we're adding in these nutrients that help us feel calmer, it's usually within, you know, a couple of days, we start to notice a difference in our energy levels. That's the first thing, that when we're fueling our body with real whole foods, we start to notice, ooh, you know what? I don't have that 3 p.m. crash anymore. I can get all my work done that I need to. I can focus throughout the day because I'm feeling more energized. My blood sugar is more stable. That's usually like a pretty immediate thing. We also start to see shortly after that, that someone's digestion will typically improve because they're consuming more fiber. They're going to become more regular and less bloated typically as well. There's a big link between anxiety and irritable bowel syndrome or IBS. So a lot of people who experience anxiety will also experience IBS, probably one of the most common co-issues or co-symptoms that I see. Because there is that big link, right, between the mind and the gut. So typically when we start having, you know, more seeds, more leafy greens, more fermented foods, then the gut health starts to improve as well. Within, you know, a couple of days up to like a month of that kind of work, someone is feeling then really good, really regular, really energized, and really calm.
That's awesome. So, I mean, if you're listening, I would recommend, you know, implementing even just one of these tips that Heather has shared around nutrition, because it can make a big impact on your energy, your ability to achieve your dreams, as well as creating more of that calm as we're going about it. Now, I want to talk about these other two pillars that you explore as well. So we have movement and mindset. So let's dive into movement first, because again, I feel like we always talk about anxiety in terms of being a mindset thing, a brain thing, but it's so related to our body. So for you, Heather, how do you feel regular exercise contributes to this management of anxiety?
Yeah, movement is so big. And, you know, when I was growing up, coming from the background that I did, being a figure skater, I was heavily involved in sports. I had that kind of perfectionism mindset. I always tended towards the activities that were very intense. So the HIIT workouts, the boot camp, the CrossFit, I think partly because I used that as an outlet, right? I didn't know how to sit with the emotions and process them. I needed to like go, go, go. But the result of that was that I was exhausted a lot of the time and I was getting injured a lot as well because my body didn't have recovery time. So I had to sort of shift into this different type of exercise. And that's really where I discovered the practice of yoga. Now, at first, my first yoga class I went to as a mistake. I thought it was a boot camp class and I looked at the time wrong. And when I got there, it was a yoga class at my university gym. And I was like, okay, I'll stay. I'll just see what it's like. And the first class I attended, I hated it. I was like, this is so slow. Like I have to sit here with my thoughts and with my breath. And I was so untethered from my body. I was not used to being in my body and paying attention to body sensations because the anxiety was so high that I almost felt this like kind of dissociation from it. Like, ooh, uncomfortable feeling. Don't want to feel that. Shove it down. And so I think that's why yoga felt a little uncomfortable at first. And it was so slow. But I went back a couple more times and that's where I started to really see the benefit of it. Like, oh, when I move in this way and link breath with movement, you know, I come out of that class feeling a lot calmer. And what I always notice coming out of a yoga class is that I don't want to grab my phone right away. I stay in this sort of yoga bubble. And if I'm crossing the street and the crossing sign starts to flash and blink, I don't run and cross it like I typically would. I would be like, go, 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 hurry up and get it. So I noticed that it really helped me slow down and calm down and get this greater connection with the body. So that's what I bring when I'm working with clients is these lower intensity types of movements. So yoga, you know, bar classes, Pilates, walking, such an underrated, fantastic way to regulate the nervous system. And bonus points if it's outside somewhere, right? In nature, is that we can then have that connection, not just to ourselves, but also to the world around us and bring in a little bit of that mindfulness work as well. So I think movement is huge in terms of anxiety. For me personally, it's helped regulate my nervous system so much, but it's also helped create a greater connection to my body.
I love that. Yeah. Movement is so key. And I like that you mentioned this idea of doing gentle movement because this is so common, I think, for the high achiever, for us ambitious folks. Like if I'm going to go to the gym, I want to make the most out of my time. How can I have the most efficient 15-minute workout, right? These are common things that I always hear people saying. But the problem is when we end up doing those HIIT workouts, it's like you said, it can exacerbate it. And what I see all too often is people will go through, let's say they're doing something like weightlifting or something that really increases your heart rate a lot more, then they forget to do the cool down. So now they're left in this sympathetic state and leaving the gym, going on with their lives without taking that chance to settle their nervous system back down.
Right. Yeah. So activated, right? Yeah. And these types of more intense workouts do affect hormones, right? They are going to spike cortisol. And if you are already feeling anxious and you're already tending towards that burnout side of things, then we don't want to be activating cortisol anymore, right? We want to be hanging out in that parasympathetic, that rest and digest side, that relaxing side of our nervous system, the side where connection, creativity, and growth happen. So it's actually going to improve your business or your work if you're hanging out in that parasympathetic side more often.
Yeah. Wow. So implementing more of that yoga, these slower movements, I think is really powerful. And I also like that you mentioned walking. Something I learned recently is that, you know, EMDR, the therapy, it was actually discovered because a woman was going on lots of walks and she noticed that if she let her eyes wander from side to side and look at the trees and look at the, you know, surroundings, then it actually helped her to release that feeling of stress and anxiety. And I think it was originally developed around trauma.
But so interesting that, you know, the movement itself and also, you know, being aware of your surroundings, it can help you escape that tunnel vision that gets us into that panic mode.
Yeah. Oh, so fascinating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about mindset, the third pillar, because while it is more so talked about, it is so important for anxiety management. So how do you work with your clients and your students inside of your app to help them with their mindset and calming down their nervous system?
Yeah, I think mindset can be addressed in a couple ways. So when I say mindset, I mean like it's about the thoughts that you think, right? It's the way that we see the world and ourselves. And so we can address our mindset through things like the practice of journaling, right? Like getting out our thoughts, diving deeper into some of the roots of anxiety. We can address mindset through practices like gratitude. So powerful. Gratitude is sort of like the antidote to anxiety, right? Because it's in the like, okay, right here, right now, what's good? And anxiety is very much like, what's bad? What's going to go wrong? So gratitude is a fantastic practice. And then meditation, I would say, is the big one. And meditation, what I've seen is that a lot of people with anxiety, there's this sort of reticence to dive into meditation. There's this thought process of like, well, I can't clear my mind of thoughts, right? Like I have too many thoughts. And that's what I thought when I first started meditating. I thought that I was going to have to empty my brain of thoughts. And I was like, but I'm always planning 10 moves ahead. Like, how can I empty my mind? What I learned is that it's not about trying to clear your mind. It's about trying to find some separation, some detachment from the thoughts and the emotions, and to play a bit more of an observer, to play a scientist, and to kind of get curious about what's coming up. And in that way, we can get to the root a little bit more of like, well, but why am I feeling anxious right now, right? Like, is it that, you know, someone didn't text me back and now I'm feeling like, oh my God, they hate me. I've done something wrong. I'm not good enough. Like, is it activating that sort of set of beliefs? We won't ever know that if we don't allow ourselves to go deeper, right? If we don't have the willingness to dive into the discomfort a little bit, and that's what meditation teaches us, is how can we dive into the discomfort, feel it, sit with it, but then let it go and release it. And so the meditation practices that I use with my clients and on the Cultivating Calm app is very short, targeted ones. So one's about like, you know, you're feeling a sense of dread and overwhelm right now. You have, or that big meeting is coming up at work. Let's do a practice for that. Or you're feeling the anxiety very physically in the body right now. Let's do a practice to dive into that. Because I think where meditation loses people is it can feel too much to start. And it feels like, well, I don't have time for, you know, 10, 20 minutes a day. My philosophy is let's build the consistency first, and then we can build a longer duration. So if all you have time for today is a 2-minute, a 3-minute practice, great, let's do that. Let's get that consistent in the day. And then over time, as you start to see, ooh, you know, this works, then we can build up to a longer duration and, you know, more different techniques and more sessions to play around with.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Starting small and then building up from there, not putting, again, all this pressure on yourself to be a perfect meditator right when you start off.
Yes, it's such a good link with perfectionism, right? Is that as perfectionists, we get really frustrated when we're not, quote unquote, good at something the first time, right? And so we drop it. This is why perfectionists won't often pick up new hobbies, or they won't put themselves in a situation where they could be bad at something because it's very uncomfortable and it's very, you know, threatening in a way, and that will spike anxiety. So we want to give ourselves the grace, I guess, give ourselves this self-compassion to be able to try something, to explore, to play that scientist, that observer. And in that way, we can then build up our, you know, our tolerance to be bad at something or to try something new. And that comes along with being ambitious as well, right? For the listeners, is like, it's scary to try something new. It's scary to continually put yourself out there. And that's, I think meditation teaches us the skills that we need to be able to show up and put ourselves out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. It helps you to increase that awareness so that you actually know what's going on, as you mentioned, right? That even that ability to process and understand your emotions that we were talking about earlier. And for me, I find that getting into this calmer state of mind has really helped me to get to the root of my anxiety so that I'm no longer just managing the symptoms that appear on the surface level when we're in the situation. And so I'm curious for you, what do you feel is this root cause of overthinking?
Yeah, if we're going to talk about the root cause of overthinking, I think we have to dive into some of those limiting beliefs. And I've sort of mentioned them, you know, a couple times in our chat today. But when I'm talking about limiting beliefs, I mean like subconscious beliefs. So we all have these kind of scripts that we're running in our mind, right? As, you know, as we were growing up, we had these messages that we received about the world and about ourselves and our worth and, you know, and kind of like who we are. So there's sort of like a filter that we're seeing everything in the world through. So let's say, you know, you're at work, for example, and your boss emails you and says, "Hey, can we chat?" Now, for a lot of people, that's like immediate panic. That's a spiral reaction into, oh my gosh, I've done something wrong. I'm going to get fired. And then if I get fired, I can't support my family. And then I'm going to lose the house and all my friends will leave me. And it's sort of like 0 to 100 in just a couple of seconds. Right now, we have no actual evidence that that is how that is going to play out, but we're running this script. And what I have seen among clients and for my own journey is that the core limiting beliefs that a lot of us have is that I'm not good enough, I can't make mistakes, and people will judge me and then leave and abandon me. Those are sort of like the core ones that I see at the root of a lot of what's going on, because it's never about the situation itself, right? It's never about the fact that you have a presentation to make or a big meeting and you're really nervous. It's never about that. It's never about the fact that the boss, you know, sent you this email. It's that it's activating this deeper pattern, right? It's activating this deeper limiting belief. And when we can understand what the belief is that's being activated through the use of, mindfulness and increased awareness, then we can actually reprogram how the neural pathways are firing, because it's just an old story that's playing out in your mind, right? It's a filter that everything is being run through. But if we can reprogram that, then we can have you know that you are good enough, right? You are lovable, that you are worthy, because then that person who believes that they are good enough, they are worthy, they are lovable, they go after their dreams. They go after what they want, right? If a boss sends them an email, they're like, oh, great, maybe I'm up for a promotion. Like that's a different lens, right? To view the world, which then inspires a different set of behaviors. Because otherwise, if we don't address the limiting beliefs and we don't reprogram what's coming up in the subconscious, we are stuck in that same pattern. So that every time the boss emails you, you're going to have the same reaction, right? Because you're not addressing the root.
Yeah, that is so key. And I like how you touched on this idea of beliefs, because so often when we think about anxiety, we think about the actions, like either what it makes us do or how it makes us feel, and the thoughts that come up that are circling around in our head. But all of those things are always anchored in something. And a lot of the time it is that belief, right? Like you said, that story that we're telling ourselves in the background. So
yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. And, you know, often we'll end up sort of blaming the environment, right? Like blaming externally what happens. But the reason the anxiety is there is because that belief is sort of activating this type of emotional threat, right? I mean, that's the whole purpose of anxiety, right? The purpose of anxiety is, hey, something feels dangerous about this, so I want you to be on alert. And that's why anxiety is like, it's sort of like a signpost, right? It's just there to tell you like, this feels dangerous. And so anxiety is so great at warning us of physical danger, right? You step off the curb, a car is coming towards you, and you jump out of the way. Like nervous system activates and it happens so fast. What it's not great at doing, or hasn't evolved perhaps the same way that humans have, is that these types of emotional threats we experience, right? So someone doing that big presentation at work, that doesn't equal death or danger, right? But the nervous system doesn't know the difference. All it knows is, oh my gosh, if you get up there in front of a group of people and you are judged, that could mean that you would be left abandoned or alone. That would be dangerous, right? Because we're such social creatures and we've evolved to kind of be with our tribe, that could feel really dangerous. And so that's why the anxiety is coming out. I think if we understand then what the root is, then we can say, okay, I'm safe right now. I'm safe in this moment, right? And we can use affirmations to kind of reprogram some of this.
That is so smart. And then it really allows us to have that control, like you said, to reprogram, as opposed to just acting on reaction, right? Almost giving like a band-aid solution.
Right. Because then every time we're the whim then, right, of our environment, every time then the environment gets a little uncomfortable, it's going to cause that same type of anxious reaction. And like, what a life that would be to be always at the whim of whatever is happening in our environment, right? That's not personal power.
No, it's so true. And that's going to be the opposite of peace too, because our world, as it's proven, is always in a state of chaos and change. So we have to find that within ourselves.
It's so true. Yeah.
Well, this has been fabulous, Heather. Thank you so much for sharing so much gold with us. Now, is there any final advice or something that's on your heart that we haven't talked about that yet that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think if I could offer sort of like one concrete, you know, takeaway or thing to start thinking about that we haven't really touched on is a little bit about language and the language we use when we talk about anxiety. So there's a lot of patterns that I notice people saying. So a lot of people will say like, I'm just an anxious person, right? We have this sort of identity as an anxious person, and there's no judgment behind that. That was me for years. So I would really encourage people to think about shifting that identity, because if you have an identity that you're just an anxious person, that's always who you're going to be then, right? I've seen trends in my practice of the clients that have the most success and actually heal are the people that have the door open a little bit on that thought, that say, you know, I experience anxiety, but I want to get to a place where I've gotten past it, right? Or I want to get to a place where I know how to manage it a lot better so that I'm not always going from 0 to 100. So we can sort of watch the language around that identity piece. And then also, if we're saying language like, you know, my anxiety, right? Having that ownership of it, I think that's a key piece as well. Because if we can shift to know that I'm experiencing an emotion of anxiety, right? Anxiety is an emotion I experience. It's not who I am at my core, because who I am at my core and who our listeners are at their core are, you know, someone with big dreams, someone who wants to make big impact on the world. And the reality is, big impact and have these big dreams and achieve whatever you want in the world is that you're going to have to make these big, scary moves, right? And it's really hard to do that if you're letting anxiety govern the decisions and letting anxiety hold you back, right? So anxiety is just an emotion that we experience. It's not who we are.
Yes, I think that that is such an important distinction. I know in my life, it made all the difference, is that shift from being like, I am anxious, I have anxiety, right? This is something I have, something who I am, to this is actually just something I'm experiencing. And just like any experience, you can move through it. It doesn't define you. So thank you for that final advice. That's really important. Now, where can our listeners connect with you to learn more about you and your app?
Yeah, happy to share. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Nicole, for having me. This was such an incredible conversation. Your questions were so insightful. I loved connecting with you and our audience. So again, for those listening, my name is Heather Lillico, and you can come hang out with me in my community, Cultivating Calm. So if you're someone who wakes up with a pit of dread in your stomach, thinking about your endless to-do list, or if you find yourself distracted throughout the day, procrastinating, worrying about the what ifs, or if you're someone who doesn't know how to relax without feeling guilty, then you can check out the Cultivating Calm app. You just head to the App Store or Google Play, and you can search for Cultivating Calm. And Cultivating Calm, we sort of talked about it today, but it's all about teaching you the habits you need to feel confident, to stay present and fully enjoy the moment, and to help you learn how to relax without feeling guilty, how to recharge. Cultivating Calm is holistic anxiety support. It's easy, it's convenient, it's on the go. And it's really about putting all those pieces of the puzzle that we talked about today. So mindset, nutrition, and movement. And it's kind of getting to the root of anxiety, right? It's the exact formula that I used to manage anxiety, because I know anxiety can be so overwhelming. So I want to help people figure out like exactly the plan to use and where to start. And if folks go to the App Store or Google Play and you type in Cultivating Calm, you'll get a free 14-day trial to check it out. And I'll mention finally that I know anxiety can feel lonely and scary and overwhelming. So I also want to offer our listeners a free 30-minute one-on-one strategy session with me. So if you want to take advantage of that, then once you download the Cultivating Calm app, there will be a spot where you can set up that visit with me. And in that visit, I'm going to give you 3 concrete strategies that you can start to change right away to feel calmer in the next week.
Wow, that is amazing. So generous. Thank you, Heather. And I'll be sure to link all of that as well as Heather's social media so that you can connect with her that way in the show notes. So you can just scroll down and click there to check out all of this. So thank you again, Heather. This has been amazing. And to our listeners, thank you so much for listening. I hope that you have found this conversation to be as impactful and empowering as I have. Now, if you have found this episode to be helpful, you know, anxiety is impacting so many of us. So we'd love if you could share it with somebody who could benefit from this, benefit from these tips that Heather has shared. And thank you again for listening. We will see you next time for another episode of Anxious and Ambitious.